Erias Perik Zayin, Mishnah Zayin, 7-7. Here we have the same two, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Papias, who are going to be testifying regarding four different matters. The first two have to do with Tumah Tahara, the second two have to do with the Ibur Hashana, the adding of an extra month to the Jewish calendar. So let's talk about these things one at a time. First, we talk about the status of what are called Arukos Shel Nachtomen, or according to the gears we have in Action Maseches Kelim, it's Arubos. We're talking here about some kind of tray that's made out of wood on which the baker would prepare the loaves before they go into the oven. So there's a rule when it comes to kelim utensils. If they're made out of wood, they are not susceptible to tumah unless they have a base kibble, a receptacle where something could be held. This is based on the fact that there's a drush that connects kli eitz, a wooden utensil, to sak, called a sack now to be simple, which contains things. So if the kli eitz, the wooden utensil, has no base kibble or receptacle to hold something, it's not susceptible to tumah. Now, that being the case, there is still certain what are called pshute kli eitz, wooden utensils that have no base kibble, no receptacle, which are susceptible to tumah midurabanan. And the dispute here is whether aruchos shel nachtomen are in fact rabbinically susceptible to tumah. So the idea here is that these aruchos are sort of, although they have no base kibble, they have no receptacle, they are fairly well engineered and function like, I'll call them sophisticated or slightly sophisticated utensils. Meaning the balabais, a regular person at home, he also has some kind of like arucha to make his bread on. But that's just like a simple flat wooden tray, and that for sure is not makabel tumah. But the nachtomen have, you know, a kind of well-engineered flat tray, which while it doesn't have a base kibble, has other features to make it sort of especially good at or efficient for using for this function. Therefore, the rabbis, at least Machlokas here, if the rabbis said, since it functions like a highly specialized tool, if you will, it's like a clean and settled tumah, even though it technically midoraisa doesn't have a base kibble, it's not makabel tumah. So that's the first issue. The Mishnah says inside, Heim he'idu al aruchos shel nachtomen. They, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Papias, testified regarding these trays that the bakers use, shehen tameos, that they are indeed susceptible to tumah, Shrabi Eliezer Matar, because they had to say that because Rabbi Eliezer said no, since they are pshute kli eitz, they have no receptacle, they're not susceptible to tumah, even Madura Bonan. The second case we're talking about here is actually a very famous case. It has to do with a tanur, these like conical ovens, they're kind of like furnaces almost, that they would use in the time of the Mishnah. They're made out of earthenware. And the question is, what happens if you cut them into segments, make horizontal cuts so that you have several cuts, none of them are especially big and none of them are like the majority of a tanur. But if you kind of stack them on each other again, you could sort of reconstitute the tanur. Now the specific case is that when one stacked these slices, these segments of the tanur, they put sand between each segment. That would sort of separate the segments. Maybe it makes them lie flush or lie better, but definitely it separates the segments so there wouldn't be like a fully reconstituted tanur as it was before. But the common practice was that after you put a tanur on the ground, they would enclose the entire tanur in like a layer of plaster, tit. So the question is, once you sort of replaster this tanur, even though it's in segments, and even though there's sand between the segments, now it's like one cohesive whole, arguably, since it's encased in this big, plaster layer. So the question is, once you put the plaster around it, does that overcome the fact that the segments are divided and separated by sand, and therefore it's, once again, a functional clean makabel tumah, or no? Since you haven't got the requisite size of a tanur, and it's like separate segments, and the segments are divided by sand, it's not reconstituted, even though it's surrounded in plaster, and therefore it's not settled tumah, it's tahor. Now, in this case, Rabbi Eliezer says it's tahor, and these two, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Papias, say it's tameh. The reason why this case is famous, I don't want to get into it now much, but just to say that in Maseches Bava Metzia on Daf Nun Tes, there's a famous dispute where this happened, and Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't back down from his position that it was tahor, ultimately bringing a variety of proofs, like miraculous proofs, culminating in a baskel, heaven itself, testifying that Rabbi Eliezer is right, and why are you bothering with him? He's always right. To which the Chacham said, Lo b'shamayim he, Torah's not in heaven, and they ultimately actually sort of excommunicated Rabbi Eliezer for not backing down. Fascinating story, not more of that for now, but that's this case here. And this appears also in Maseches Kelim. This is in the fifth parak of Maseches Kelim, Mishnah Yod. says inside, Hem he'idu, they testified, meaning Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Papias testified, al tanur, regarding this conical oven, shechat chulios, that was cut horizontally into different segments, v'nasan chol ben chuli l'chulia, and then there was sand placed between each of the segments when it was put back together, but then it was plastered around, shehu tame, that it once again is reconstituted as a tanur, and is yes susceptible to tuma, says the Tanakhama, meaning Rabbi Yeshua and Papias, and they had to say that because Rabbi Eliezer mitar, Rabbi Eliezer said no, it's still tahor, it's not reconstituted, it's not makabel tuma. Okay, again, halacha would be like the Chachamim, like the people who are testifying, like Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, now the third, and the fourth really of the Mishnah here, these cases have to do with the adding of a month to Jewish calendar. So just the backstory there briefly is, there's an obligation to keep the Jewish calendar sort of in line with the solar calendar so that the holiday of Pesach happens in the Chodesh Aviv, in the springtime. Now the problem is, the Jewish calendar is based on months, lunar months, of which each lunar month is 29 and a half days. 12 of those gets you 354 days. Whereas the solar calendar is based on the Earth's position around the sun, and that takes 365 and a quarter days. That means every year you're losing 11 and a quarter days, basically, between the solar and lunar calendars. So in order to ensure that the Jewish lunar calendar stays aligned with the astronomical reality of the solar cycle, so therefore, from time to time, they would add an extra month into the Jewish calendar, making a 13th month, and bring things back into alignment. Now, in the time of the Mishnah, they decided whether or not to add an extra month based on what amounts to essentially six different factors, all of which have to do with, are we ready for Pesach and the Korban Omer or not? Okay, because if the roads, for example, that lead to the Beis HaMikdash weren't ready, because they were like, you know, let's say it was heavy rains that winter, and the masses couldn't make it to the Beis HaMikdash because of the bad roads, they would delay for a month, giving more time to set things up. Or similarly, if, you know, the grain that you needed for the Korban Omer, the first of the ripening barley grain, wasn't ripening yet, again, they would push things off. So in the time of the mission, they would make a decision based on the realities on the ground. Since the year 358 of the Common Era, so we're talking now, you know, for 1600 plus years, they've had a fixed calendar, which is what we use. Every 19 years, we have seven leap years, seven extra months, and that makes it work out perfectly fine. But in case of the mission, the point is that we need to make a decision every year, should this year be a supplemented year that's sort of pregnant with an extra bulging 13th month to extend the year by extra month. So now the first case of remission here is, until when in the year may the Sanhedrin extend the year by another month? So the last month of the Jewish calendar, Adar, is the 12th month, and that's when it has to happen. That's when it will happen, of course. The question is, how late in Adar can it happen? So originally, it seems, they wouldn't let it go past the holiday of Purim, which is the middle of the month, the 14th of Adar. And the reason why is because there's a separate rule altogether, which is 30 days before the onset of a holiday, they're supposed to begin to teach the halachas of the holiday. So this Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, 30 days before the holiday of Pesach, coincides with the holiday of Purim, which means from Purim onwards, the rabbis are teaching about the halachas of Pesach, to prepare for Pesach, and therefore the thought was that people, if they're told after, like, once they've started to learn for Pesach, oh, Pesach not for another whole month, people wouldn't believe it. They'd say, oh no, it's within the 30 days, because you see, you've started to learn, the rabbis are teaching about it, you're making a mistake. That was the thought. However, here Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Papias are going to say, no, people get it. People know that, even though that's usually 30 days between Purim and Pesach, sometimes it's 60 days if they add a month, and people understand that there could be an added month, and therefore you're allowed to delay it until later in the month, really until the end of the month, meaning the 29th day of the month of Adar is the last chance. Just as a side point here, it is true that the Adar could have a 30th day, but since the 30th day could be already Rosh Chodesh, the first of the month of Nisan and the first day of the new year, they are not allowed to add an extra month at that point. It's too late. But until the 29th of Adar, say Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias, yes, you still could. So the Mishnah says inside, Heim he'idu, they testified, Shema'abr nesashana, they could add an extra month to the year, B'chol Adar, throughout the entire month of Adar. Why did they say that? Shaya Omen, because originally they said, Ad HaPurim, they said the deadline was by Purim, the 14th of the month, for the reasons I said before. Okay, now the last part of the Mishnah is that there's a rule. Basic protocol of how the Sanhedrin operated was that the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, had to approve, had to ratify the Ibur Hashanah, they're adding an extra month. So the question is it possible that they can convene as a Sanhedrin and add the extra month, not in the presence of the Nasi, but make that declaration of the extra month be contingent upon his approval? So it's a contingent declaration of an extra month, and then later on, when the Nasi learns about it, he can then approve, and then retroactively will be approved as being an extra, extended year. So the question is, can that be done? And they say, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias are testifying, yes, you can do it that way. Says the Mishnah inside, Hem he'idu shem'abim res hashana al tanai. There's a possibility of the Sanhedrin resolving to extend the year by another month, I should say, and then let it be retroactively approved by the Nasi. And in fact, this actually happened. Umaisa, once happened, Barabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi in the time of Yavne. At the time this was happening, he was the first Nasi after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai set up Yavne, and that's what's happening. Remember, the whole story of Edius is happening here in Yavne. Shahalach Lito Rishus Mehegmon Besuria. He went to Syria, that's modern-day Syria, the legate there, the Roman legate, to get permission regarding something. The word hegemon, like the modern English word, like hegemony. Hegemon means like the leader, the person who's in charge over there. Vishah lavo, and he delayed in coming back, meaning Rabban Gamliel, the Nasi, was still in Syria at the time that the Sanhedrin locally in Yerushalayim, or whatever, Yavna, I should say, wanted to be ma'abar the Shana. The Ibru es Hashana, and they in fact did declare the year a leap year, adding extra month, al tanai, on condition that when the Nasi Rabban Gamliel comes back, he'll approve it. L'kshayir to Rabban Gamliel, that it will be approved based on his his approval, on his desire to say so. Ukeshaba, and when he indeed came back from Syria, amar rotza ani, he said, yes, I agree, that's what I want, that the year should be added an extra month. V'nimtzeis hashana mu'uberes, and it turned out that retroactively, that the year had been extended by another month, retroactive from the time that the Sanhedrin declared it so, even though at the time the Nasi hadn't approved it, because they made it contingent upon his approval, which he subsequently gave.